This second tape begins with Father H.W. Mick Slattery, who was at St. Mark's during the war years.
Well, when I was appointed to Drummoyne, I was appointed as assistant priest, but Monsignor Meaney made his assistants a quasi-administrator, because each day, 7 days a week, he went into 2SM, and his routine was he got up early in the morning, said Mass about 6:30 privately, had his breakfast, 9 o'clock he went to 2SM, remained there all day until about 5:30, and he came home, had tea, said some office and said his rosary, and went back to 2SM and came back about 10 o'clock. That was practically his routine every day, 7 days a week. And when I went there, he said, you'll be my administrator. He said, you look after the parish, you keep the books, you pay the bills, you run the parish. Don't ask me anything about 2SM, and I won't ask you anything about the parish. That was the agreement. And so that's the way I lived with him for 4 years. And I can state those 4 years, despite the fact that they were war years, they were the happiest times that I've ever enjoyed in any parish I've been in. Well, the school was the old school, an old wooden building that ran parallel with Tranmere Street at the back, from the church over to the convent. And it was an old wooden building. The nun that was in charge there was Sister Placida and Sister Carmelita. Well, I suppose some of the old residents of Drummoyne would remember. They might have forgotten about Placida. They certainly wouldn't forget Carmelita, because she was a character in her own right. I can tell you one incident that happened to me. She was a sacristan. She decorated the altar, and no expense was too great to decorate the altar. Now, you know, the old altar at sanctuary at St. Mark's was a feature. Three marble altars, beautiful marble altars, a marble sanctuary, a marble pulpit, and donated by, I think, Kate Byrne. And she had the altar all decorated up, so much so with gladioli and so on, that you couldn't see the altar at all. And she said to me, "Well, what do you think of the altar, Father?" I said, "The altar's very beautiful if you could see it." And she wasn't very pleased at that. She wasn't pleased at anything that you said that she didn't like, and she'll let you know all about it. A famous character, I can assure you. I've been asked, do I remember any of the baptisms I did, or any of the marriages I did, any first communions I did? Well, all I can say is, look up the registers of those years I was there, from 1941 to the end of 1944, and you'll find all the records there. I simply couldn't remember them. All I can state is that I did the whole lot, so it'd be possible for me to remember. The only one that stands out in my memory is Zelma Latta. Zelma's mother, of course, was the organist, and Zelma herself, I'd forgotten I'd given her first communion, to tell her the truth, but later on, when I was parish priest of Miranda, and we had the Sisters of St. Joseph of California there, one of the postulants that come along during my time there was Zelma Latta, who became Sister Rose Marie. I was the only assistant priest there, but during the whole of my time there, the regular supply was Father Tommy Carl, or Dr. Tommy Carl. He was the secretary of the apostolic delegation. He was there before I went there, and he was there after I left. So he would be the longest serving priest, I think, at Drummoyne, but not belonging to the staff. He just did the weekend supplies. He rose to great heights. He became the Bishop of Cairns, and then later on the Archbishop of Canberra-Goulburn. And that's the only priest there. And I might say that he was a lovely character. He enjoyed coming to Drummoyne, and I think the people loved him very much. Archbishop Kelly, of course, had great confidence in Monsignor Meaney, and he was a diocesan consultor. He was the man who ran the Eucharistic Congress of 1928 and was one of the big men of the diocese. Archbishop Sheen, of course, was his coadjutor, and just his main job was just giving confirmations. Apart from that, he had very little to do. He was a man of great vision. I remember as a student about 1930, he was talking to us in the college, and he mentioned that he wished he could see the day that the divine office would be said in the vernacular, in English, our vernacular. And he said, I'd go further. He said, I'd wish I could see the day that the Mass would be said in English. And that's in 1930, and that was the vision of Archbishop Sheehan. Yes. When I was at Clovelly in 1939, the war broke out, of course, then, I went to Des Moines in 41 and remained there till the end of the war. I mean, the war ended while I was there. They were hard years. It was not a very nice thing to see the young fellows in the parish being conscripted or volunteered or whatever. And our worst job, of course, was to go and see the people whose sons had been injured or killed. It wasn't a very pleasant task at all. A lot of Americans were based nearby, and they were causing the usual problems. With marriages coming up, wanting to get married, and all the regulations we had to observe in marrying them. And even some of our own young fellows. Well, I remember one young fella that I had to send away. I refused to marry him. He was only about 19, and he was engaged to a girl who was about 17. And I asked him to have his mother's permission. His father was dead. He says, no, I said, you've got to get that. And I said, don't you think it's a bit tough? I said, you're going to the war now, and an allotment will be made to you, and you'll make that to your proposed wife. I said, the poor mother that's a widow has looked after you. You just simply won't pass the compliment of asking her to give her the consent to your marriage. But I said, you're not even prepared to give her what little assistance you can now. Well, the upshot of it was that he didn't get married because I refused to marry him. But we had problems like that during the war years. Of course, we had the trouble with the blackouts. Des Moines was a very dangerous area on account of all the islands and the ammunition dumps around the place. And the blackouts were very severe. And the priests, of course, were wardens. But apart from that, unpleasant years, but nevertheless pleasant as far as doing parish work was concerned. Oh, yes, first of all, old Mary Mimner, who was the housekeeper, she was second in charge of the parish. Whatever Mary said went. Among the parishioners, yes, the famous character was old Kate Byrne. Kate was one of the greatest benefactors of the parish. She was Colonel Byrne's widow, who I think was a mayor of Des Moines at one time. Then, of course, you had the pubs. The Englishes had the pubs and the Fays. They were very outstanding people. You had the O'Gormans. You had the Tancreds. You had the Foleys. You had the Hickeys. Hickey made a fortune during the war. He was he's still hams. And altogether, I'd say the families at Des Moines were wonderful, a lot of people. I can remember that, as I said, it was 4 years, but I enjoyed every minute of the time I was there. Well, the gardens were beautiful because Monsignor Meany was a great gardener. And we had always an outstanding feature of Tranmere Street, the Presbytery Gardens. But the war again broke that up. If the people during those years can remember, the old Mons dug up a good portion of the garden and grew spuds. And so we got our own supply of vegetables, particularly spuds, during the war years, and so the garden had to go. tell you a fun little thing about the garden. As I said, I did everything there, the Easter ceremonies. Well, you did the whole lot yourself. And the old Mons, on Good Friday, I'd be out there doing the Station of the Cross and doing the ceremonies and so on, and the Mons would be out in the garden doing the gardening and mowing the lawn. I forgot to mention too, we had another famous character from Des Moines, the famous irrepressible Fred Daly, a Member of Parliament. Well, Fred was the... it was a strange story about that. I think... I don't know whether Al Falter is still alive. As you know, Des Moines was not a blue ribbon Labour seat. The Labour end of it was Five Dock. But Al Falter was a good Labour man. We had a good little Labour league there. And he came to me one day, he said, what do you think, as a young fellow, he said, we like to push as our member for Des Moines. He said, a chap named Fred Daly. He's only quite a young fellow. Well, Fred was in the parish, nice young fellow. And so I said, why not? And so anyhow, by some strange fortune or luck, whatever it is, Fred was elected. And later on, of course, when they started gerrymandering the area around there, he went move over to Marrickville, where he got a safe Labour seat. But he was one of the famous characters there. He wasn't so famous in those days. He was a nice young fella. He did a favour for me. I know we couldn't get tyres in those days, and Frank was just a new member of Parliament. So I said, Fred, what about some tyres? I'll get them for you, he said. Well, he did. So he did one good turn for the Catholic Church. He got me some tyres. That's very nice. It brought back wonderful memories. I wish I could remember more things. But if you ask me questions, I can always recall them then. But to speak after so many years of absence from the place, obviously you forget. But I'll still, at the same time, in general, I'll always remember with gladness and joy the time I spent at Des Moines.